Hello, and welcome to my podcast. This is an audio version of my videos, available to make listening to my stuff in the background easier than YouTube makes it. But since my videos are primarily made for YouTube, there may be occasional references to visual materials. If you'd like this podcast ad-free, you can join us on Patreon at patreon.com/vicerhino. Please enjoy. Hello, and welcome to my channel. Vice Rhino here. Today, we're looking at a David Reeves video in which they supposedly test the atheistic worldview. Now, for starters, there's just the plain fact that atheism by itself is not a worldview. It can be a part of a worldview, sure, it can inform your worldview, but ultimately, atheism itself is just an answer to one question. Do you believe that a god or gods exist? But let's see how exactly they plan on testing this worldview.
How can we use this to test our worldview? Is there any test that we can do?
Sure, that's what we do at this point, because starting points, by definition, can't be proven.
Yes, these are presuppositions. Everybody has them. There are a number of them, but the main one that I'm fond of using is that reality is real. I can't prove that we're not in the Matrix, but there's no functional difference between this being a Matrix situation as opposed to it actually being real, so I just assume that it is real as a matter of convenience.
You gotta start somewhere. You don't try to prove or disprove them. What you do is you take them off for a test drive.
I'm interested to learn what your distinction is here between testing and proving, because yeah, I'd agree, you don't prove them, but what are we doing here if not testing them? Now, I agree that if you dig deep enough, everybody does have presuppositions that are ultimately untestable, so if you can test them, then likely you can go down another level to find the real presuppositions that underlie whatever it is you just tested.
Okay.
How well do they work with the real world around us?
The fact that there is a real world around us is one of the presuppositions. You really have no way to directly test that.
And so we'll see, you know, how much time we have for the examples. We might look at some scientific examples and philosophical tests to see how well we'll pit the Christian worldview against the atheistic worldview. And
well, if you're going to bring up scientific evidence, that would support the atheistic worldview. So far, scientifically speaking, the world seems to operate in ways that are consistent with the idea that there are not supernatural entities that can mess with how it operates on a whim. The fact that science can be done is itself evidence against the supernatural.
First example we'll use testing these worldviews, these starting points, would be the idea of logic.
Ah, logic. So we're going to be playing apologetics word games rather than appealing to any actual evidence. Fantastic.
Mm-hmm. So all we're going to do is we're going to think through what logic is.
Now, is this something that we can say, the viewers out there, they can take note of what you're about to say and actually use these in conversations, in loving conversations, without getting too technical or even too intimidated when they talk to a skeptic?
To rephrase the question, is this a script that can be used to steer a conversation toward the conclusion that I like best as long as the atheist gives the expected answers?
Right, this is extremely practical, and we do, I'm glad you brought that up, we do want to do this very graciously.
Yeah. Scripted conversation apologetics are not gracious. They are frustrating, because often the people don't stick to your script, and rather than engaging with what is actually being said, the person using the script will often do their best to steer the conversation back to the script.
And this is not technical really at all, so the viewers could use this very simply.
Okay.
If you're going where I think you're going with this, it actually is very technical, but it can be phrased in a way that makes it seem superficially intuitive.
So we're going to think about what logic is, and we're going to evaluate it from each of the two different worldviews, Christian worldview, atheistic worldview. So I would ask an atheist, do you believe that logic exists?
And I would respond, that depends on what exactly you mean by exists. There is a debate among philosophers about whether abstract concepts actually exist, and if it is determined that they do exist, this existence is not necessarily universal. For instance, it might be said that numbers as a concept necessarily exist in a universe with properties such as the one we live in, while something like a work of fiction, like Homer's Odyssey, does not necessarily exist, though it does currently exist for us. There was a time in history when Homer's Odyssey just didn't exist, it had no existence. And now here we need to distinguish between conceptual existence and physical existence. If I write the number 1 on a page, that number is a physical object that has a physical existence, but it represents a concept that is not necessarily physical but has an abstract existence. So already we're one question in, and we've gotten into some technical and mind-bending philosophy. That is, if we actually take a moment to think about the question rather than just following the script and answering yes.
And they say, well, of course I do. Why would you ask? So I could just check in. Do you believe there are actually laws of logic, like the law of non-contradiction?
Why would you phrase that one as a belief statement? Yes, people have worked out laws of logic that describe the way the universe seems to operate. This doesn't need to be a belief statement. It's just a fact.
Okay, are these laws physical things?
No, they are abstract concepts which, as mentioned, may or may not have existence in the philosophical sense, depending on what we mean by existence.
Can I take them into a laboratory and weigh them and paint them and bend them?
I mean, you can't do that with things like, oh, I don't know, stars, but that doesn't mean that stars aren't physical. Our understanding of the laws of logic are physical manifestations in our brains, so yes, in that sense they are physical. But as they are just something that we use to describe how the universe is, then I would say that they are simply properties of the universe.
Say, well, no, they're not physical things, they're non-physical things. Okay. Are they the same everywhere, these laws of logic? Are they the same, you know, here in Dallas as they are in other parts of the country, on the moon? Or are they different in different places?
As far as we can tell, they are universal, but that cannot actually be verified at this time.
Atheists would say, well, no, the laws of logic are the same everywhere.
You know, it must really be convenient for you to be able to answer on behalf of all atheists like that. So tell me, what does someone who is following your script do if the atheist doesn't give this expected response? Awkwardly try to guide the conversation back to the script, that's what.
Okay.
Do they change?
They don't appear to, but again, this is not something that can be demonstrated.
Will the laws of logic be the same tomorrow as they are today? Were they the same 1,000 years ago, or do they change over time?
The laws of logic that we have today are descriptive. They describe the way the world appears to function. If they were different in the past or will be different in the future, then we would have different descriptions of them at those times. Is there evidence that they change from time to time? Not really, though it is possible that they didn't apply before the Big Bang. But the main point here is that we don't know if the laws of logic had to be as they are or whether they could have been any different. We just know that they are the way they are, and so we describe them as they are.
Mm-hmm. And they would say, well, no, they don't change. Mm-hmm. I would say, okay, so you're telling me you believe there are laws of logic that are non-physical things, they're the same everywhere, and they don't change.
Yeah. Sorta, kinda, with a bunch of caveats, and while pointing out that they are just a description of how things appear to operate in our universe, they themselves are not some transcendental objects.
I'd say yes. Okay, I have one final question for you then. Where did they come from?
They come from our brains. We created them as ways to describe how the universe works.
Using your starting point, your worldview, the thing that you chose, help me understand, where do these non-physical laws of logic come from? Because as an atheist, the only thing you think exists is matter and energy, physical stuff.
There are plenty of atheists who accept the existence of abstract concepts. There are also plenty who reject their existence. Personally, I find that conversation to be uninteresting. As far as I can tell, these abstract ideas exist as brain states. The laws of logic that we use to describe how the universe works would cease to be the laws of logic if thinking brains were no longer in the universe to come up with the laws of logic, and yet the universe would continue operating the way that it does currently without noticing that brains are no longer in it. Now, is this because there are some abstract concepts forcing it to act this way? No, the concepts were just developed to describe how it works. The concepts themselves do not dictate how it works.
We've never seen matter and energy create a non-physical thing, but...
Well, if you are part of the philosophical camp that believes that abstract concepts are actual things, then yes, we have. Our brains do it all the time. Also worth mentioning is that philosophers don't even agree on how to distinguish between abstract and concrete. Sure, some examples are obvious, but thus far the distinction has been made by way of example rather than by definition, and it may be the case that we never decide on an actual definition. As an example, the concept of whiteness could be abstract or concrete depending on your perspective on the matter. There are definite definitions of what white is, and there are definite objects that are white, but the way our brains see such objects complicates things quite a bit. For instance, in this classic illusion, squares A and B look like completely different shades. B is pretty close to what we would call white, while A is a much darker gray. Except if you pull this image into Photoshop and use the color picking tool, you'll see that this is a trick of our brains. They are both the same shade of gray. So there are real objects that have the property of whiteness, but how white something is to us is entirely dependent on how our brains are interpreting what they are seeing. So is whiteness a concrete or abstract concept? Well, it depends on how we're defining concrete and abstract, and as there is no universally agreed upon definition, this remains an unanswered question. Does this mean that white would not exist without organisms existing to perceive white? No. The things that are white still exist. White is simply a description of one way in which light behaves.
You believe in these non-physical things. Also, using your starting point, the thing you chose, help me understand what is it in your worldview that tells you these laws are the same everywhere?
Extrapolation. Like I said, we don't know that for sure, but we don't have any reason to believe that they do change, and so we extrapolate from our current experiences. Now, what is it from your worldview that makes you so sure that they are the same everywhere?
And lastly, what is it in your worldview that tells you they never change?
Again, extrapolation. They don't appear to have changed thus far, with the possible exception of that remarkable period of time when the universe was ultra-compressed, and so we have no reason to think that they will suddenly up and change tomorrow.
There's actually absolutely nothing in an atheistic worldview that can account for laws of logic that are non-physical, the same everywhere, and they don't change.
Wow.
Do you have evidence that they would change if there weren't a god holding them steady? Is there some inherently necessary property of universes that causes them to have wildly changing laws of logic and/or laws of physics unless an external force stabilizes them? How do you know of this property? Apologists love to assume that God is necessary to make sure that these laws remain constant, but at the same time, God violates these laws on a whim in their worldview. So in the Christian worldview, the laws of logic are constant because God has to battle the unknown forces that would cause them to change were he not there holding them at bay. What evidence do you have for the idea that these properties of the universe would be subject to change without God? None. It is purely an assumption based on intuition.
Okay, did we just disprove their worldview? No, we're not trying to.
Well, you could have fooled me. But yeah, no, they did not disprove our worldview.
No.
Just testing it, and it's not looking good so far.
Looks a lot better than the one who makes the same observations and extrapolations about how the universe appears to operate, and then makes the additional assumption that some external force needs to provide resistance to whatever other external force wants to change these laws of logic.
Then you switch over to the Christian worldview.
Okay.
How does a Christian handle this? Very simply, Christians believe in a God who is non-physical, he's the same everywhere, and he doesn't change.
So, by the logic used in this video so far, that means that we must need some sort of ultra-god to make sure that the Christian God remains non-physical, stays the same everywhere, and doesn't change.
That God created a universe that operates under laws of logic that reflect his character.
Ah, but they only reflect his character because the ultra-god that created God operates under laws of logic that reflect its character.
They are non-physical, the same everywhere, and do not change. It makes perfect sense in a Christian worldview, but it's totally antithetical to an atheistic worldview.
It only makes sense in a Christian worldview if you also believe in the aforementioned powers that are striving to change the laws of logic in our universe that your God must be constantly battling. And even then, your reasoning for why the universe is logical implies that there must be the ultra-god making your God the way he is, because otherwise, how could you have a non-physical being that stays the same everywhere and doesn't change? In order to remove God from needing something else to make him just be like that for no reason other than that's just the way he is, you need to engage in special pleading. And if God can be that way just because that's how he is, why can the universe not be that way for the same reason? A God is just an extra layer of assumption here.
Yeah. So anyone can do this.
Very simple. And again, you're just graciously asking questions, probing a little bit deeper to see how do they account for certain things given their starting point.
You're asking leading questions that are designed to get them to a specific conclusion under the assumption that this is an area that they haven't spent a lot of time deeply considering in their lives. You may get people to follow the script perfectly at some times, but I doubt this method would actually gain any converts.
So, and of course, anyone who's honest would have to say, okay, yeah, this doesn't fully match my starting point if I'm starting from a naturalistic assumption that we're here because we're here.
No, anyone that's honest would realize that this is a dishonest debate tactic meant to put people on the spot with regards to a complex philosophical issue that they likely have never considered before.
Then what do you say?
Well, two things. One, as I would say, you know what, if your worldview can't even account for logic, you're kind of done.
Your worldview accounts for logic through a bunch of baseless assumptions. My worldview accounts for logic simply as a description of how things work. I feel like my worldview accounts for it a bit better than yours.
Because you need to use logic to talk about anything else.
Yeah.
So with that, I would say, okay, let's do another test. Then I would ask them, is there anything you think you know for sure?
Yep, that sure is the next step in the presuppositionalist script. The answer you're likely looking for, which may take a couple more probing questions to get to, is no. It is possible, given what we know of how our brains operate, that the entire world that we are experiencing is nothing more than an illusion created by our brains, whether it be a matrix-type simulation or a brain in the vat or some other form of solipsism. But things that we know definitionally can be known for certain. For instance, 2 plus 2 equals 4, given how we define 2, 4, plus, and equals. I can absolutely know that for sure.
This has to do with the idea of knowledge and certainty.
Yes, knowledge and certainty, which are two distinct categories and which have subcategories. You can be certain that you know something, and that thing can be wrong. You can also be certain that you know something and that thing can be right. Your level of certainty does not necessarily conform with the truth value of the thing that you are certain or uncertain of. You can also know something just in the sense that you are aware of it. Do you know the game Hollow Knight? I do. I am aware of it. You can have personal knowledge, that is, things that you at least think you know or don't know. This is where you can know things that are actually not true, but you have confidence in your knowledge. For instance, at some point in my tenure at the Christian high school I attended, I learned that we have the Roman records for the crucifixion of Jesus. So I knew this, and even when I stopped believing in Christianity, I knew that we at least had the records for the guy that was crucified. I was confident in this knowledge. This is psychological certainty. I was certain of something, or I had a high level of confidence in the truth of that thing, regardless of its correspondence to reality. A different category is epistemic certainty. This is often rephrased as justified true beliefs. This is something that not only do you know it, but the thing is actually true, and there are good reasons for believing that it is true. And as a weird little twist, it is possible to have epistemic certainty in something without having psychological certainty in it. You may believe something that does have good reason for belief, but you are unaware of the good reasons, you just believe it. And then on the flip side, you can have high psychological certainty of something without having epistemic certainty. There is not a good justification for believing it, but you believe it anyway. This is where my belief that we had the Roman records for Jesus' crucifixion were. I was highly psychologically certain that we had them, but epistemically, we don't have anything even close to that. And likely the teacher was thinking of the brief mention in Tacitus of the guy who Christians believe in having been executed under Pilate. My point is, this is another topic that the presuppositionalist apologist wants you to have not put much thought into, as their arguments will seem intuitively appealing if you don't think about them, but once you look into the philosophy behind the various terms they're using, it turns out that the presuppositionalist has a lot of psychological certainty in their conclusions and thought processes, but very little, if any, epistemic certainty.
Mm-hmm. Anything that you feel that you really know absolutely for sure, there's no way you could be wrong. And they might say, well, I know I'm here right now.
No, I know that 2 plus 2 equals 4, pursuant to the aforementioned definitions.
Say, okay, how do you know that? How do you know you're not just dreaming you're here?
Because I have reason to believe that I am not dreaming. Having experienced being in a dream and being awake, the dream seems to make sense at the time, but you cannot test it in the moment. And often, if you become aware that you are dreaming, this causes you to wake up. In the rare occasions when you don't, you end up engaging in lucid dreaming, where you are aware that you are dreaming and may even be able to control the dream to some extent, but in such a state, you are capable of recognizing when things don't make sense. When I am awake, I regularly find things that don't make sense and can investigate them further to better understand them. But when dreaming, the prefrontal cortex, that's the part of your brain that sniffs out things that don't make sense, is mostly shut down, so you've lost your bullshit detector. So the fact that I am capable of recognizing things that don't make sense is itself evidence that I am not engaged in dreaming.
Technically, we can't even scientifically prove that we're here right now.
Yeah, that is true, but this comes back to epistemic certainty. No, we can't be 100% certain that anything actually exists and that everything isn't just some illusion of perception, but given the apparent testability of the reality in which we exist, we have good reason to believe that it is actually real, and we don't have any good reason to believe that it is not. There is no justification for the idea that reality is not real. There's just the fact that we can't prove it with 100% certainty. So the testability of reality, and the fact that other people's tests can come to the same conclusions as our own tests, is good justification for believing that reality is real, while the only potential justification for believing that it is not is to say, you can't prove it is real, so it might not be. I'ma go with the more testable option here, thanks.
Now, there's a lot of great evidence to make it very reasonable to assume we really exist.
We really are.
See? There you go. It is a justified true belief, and so we can have both epistemic and psychological certainty in it.
Yep. But you can't technically prove it. So then I would ask him another question. Out of all the information that's possible to know in the universe, mm-hmm. what percentage do you feel you know?
So you're just setting up the argument from ignorance then? There's a lot of stuff we don't know, therefore God might be among the unknown stuff?
Wow.
They'd probably say pretty small. I'd say, yeah, me too. Yeah. But let's just say for argument's sake, they said they think they know 1%.
Okay.
Okay, I'd say, okay, if you think you know 1% of everything, is it possible, is it at all possible that something in the 99% that you're admitting you don't know would reveal you were actually wrong about what you thought you knew in the 1%? Is that possible?
Yes, it is possible that we have psychological certainty where we actually think we have epistemic certainty, and that a new discovery will reveal the fact that we were wrong about it. At such a time, we will change our minds about it. But appealing to this possibility without actually bringing anything to the table is ultimately nothing more than a thought experiment, and not a very good one at that.
They'd have to say, well, yeah, it's possible. Hmm. But if it's possible you're wrong about the 1%, do you really know the 1%?
With the psychological certainty definition of knowledge, yes, I do know this stuff. Now, it is possible that this psychological certainty is not also epistemic certainty, but not all of it can be wrong. I will never learn anything that will change the answer to 2 plus 2 based on the definitions. I'm sure there's already someone in the comments talking about how 2 plus 2 equals 5 for large values of 2, and that is true, but if I'm defining 2 as an integer, then it is no longer true. Because it is based on definitions, both can be true simultaneously, because 2 is not always defined as an integer. My point is, there are many things of which I have epistemic certainty that I cannot be wrong about, no matter what new stuff is discovered.
No. In fact, you can't know anything at all.
Yes, you can. You can know lots of things. It's just a matter of whether this knowledge is epistemic or psychological.
For sure. That's and they'd say, well, you can't either. I'd say, are you sure about that?
Yes, I am sure about that. The same logic applies to both of us here. Just because you think you have a friend who revealed stuff to you such that you can be certain does not mean that this belief of yours is a justified true belief.
You know, it sounds a little juvenile, and we don't really want to go that route.
Well, then don't go that route. Why would you go that route if you don't want to go that route and you recognize it's a bad route to go? Because you're right, it does sound juvenile. That particular line has never convinced anyone to accept your propositions as true and has only frustrated people that are actually trying to engage in honest and productive dialogue.
But we're just thinking through this.
Right.
Now, it's interesting. There is one way you could know something for sure.
Okay.
Yeah, if you know it definitionally.
And that is if you knew 100% of everything.
But hang on. How would you know that you know 100% of everything? How do you know that there isn't something out there that not only do you not know, but you don't even know that you don't know it?
Well, that doesn't look too good for us.
No, that's not going to happen.
But there's one other way you could know.
Okay.
That is if you knew someone who knew everything and that person chose to tell you some of that in a way you could understand and didn't lie about it.
How do you know they didn't lie about it? They know everything, so it is conceivable that they could tell the most convincing lies that look completely true according to our perception, which, in this case, they also control, seeing as how they are God and they designed our bodily systems by which we perceive the world. Seems like there are a lot of assumptions going on here.
This is the Christian worldview. Christians believe in a God who knows everything, and he's revealed some of that to us, and he doesn't lie.
Except when he does lie. To quote the Bible, Ezekiel 14:9 says, "And if the prophet is deceived and speaks a word, I, the Lord, have deceived that prophet." Now, you could play word games here and say that it is possible to deceive someone without actually lying, and you're right, that is possible. But then that also serves to undercut your point. If God can deceive us without lying, then how do we know that our perceptions have not been deceived, even if we should trust that God never lied to us? On top of that, how do you demonstrate to me that God has indeed revealed anything to you? And how do I, as a mere human, learn the difference between knowledge that God has revealed to me and knowledge that I have obtained myself? This idea creates more problems than it solves.
Wow. A Christian actually has a philosophical basis for claiming to know something absolutely for sure, whereas an atheist has to admit they could be wrong about everything.
To rephrase in the way that that sounds to me, an atheist has to be intellectually honest, while a Christian can just assume that what they know is accurate because God told them, without being able to meaningfully distinguish between knowledge obtained through God and knowledge obtained in other ways.
That's amazing.
Amazingly oversimplistic, maybe. Remember in Friday's video when I said that presuppositionalism is apologetics for people who want to sound smart but don't actually want to engage with ideas that they disagree with? This is what I meant. Any off-script answer that an atheist gives to any of these questions will usually be waved away, and then the questioner will try to get the atheist back on script. And these are complicated philosophical issues, of which there is much literature on the matter. The presuppositionalist will allude to some of these philosophical ideas, giving the impression that they know what they're talking about when navigating these philosophical discourses, but in reality, they present the ideas as a dichotomy, when no dichotomy exists, and then they ignore any amount of nuance in the positions and rely on the fact that most people aren't familiar enough with philosophy to call their bluffs. Your script is giving people the appearance of being philosophically sophisticated without actually providing any of the substance. It's a mere shell.
The vast majority of the population has been steeped in this idea that we are related to ape-like ancestors over millions of years of slow evolution.
That's not being steeped in the idea, that's just accepting the scientific consensus. Evolution is the most agreed upon of the issues that are regularly thought of as controversial in science, like climate change and mandatory vaccinations. When you can get scientists to agree with something at such a high level, you can be epistemically certain that this thing is true. Not to mention the fact that this whole discussion is completely irrelevant to evolution.
And this view has so permeated society, and it is so permeated society in a way that it's been taught as fact, that we're afraid to even come against that or appear ignorant.
David, you are ignorant. Incredibly ignorant. Which is an appearance that is brought on by the fact that you have such a high level of psychological certainty about something that you are completely wrong about, epistemically speaking.
Right. The quote would be like, oh, right. You're right, and all the scientists are wrong.
Exactly. When it comes to figuring out who is a reliable source, I will take the millions of scientists who spend and have spent their entire lives studying biology when they say something specifically about biology over David Reeves, who the closest he can get to being considered scientifically minded is that he likes to look through telescopes. The idea that David Reeves is right about a biological topic and the millions of biologists are all completely wrong is just so incredibly unlikely as to be laughable.
And it is intimidating. While most people believe in evolution because they've been taught that most people believe in evolution, but...
Does that include the biologists who specifically study evolution? They just believe it because they were taught as kids that everyone believes it? Sure.
My experience, 33 years, is that the vast majority of people I talk to might believe in evolution, but they themselves can't give you any facts. They just say, well, there's tons of books out there. Go get a book if you want to know. It's like, okay.
Yeah, most people do not have time to specialize in evolution. There is over a century and a half of both scientific and popular literature on the subject. To be an expert requires an enormous time sink. It is not surprising that most people are not that invested in it. That's it for this one. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Minda Carpenter, who says, FYI, the little statues of women may have been made by women in order to document their pregnancy. It is not known for sure. I just thought you might be interested in the competing hypothesis there because it's kind of interesting. Yes, shortly after publishing the video, I was made aware of a study from 1996 that pointed out that the weird exaggerations of those particular statues match pretty closely with what a woman would see when looking down at her own body while in the different stages of pregnancy, so they could have been some sort of Paleolithic obstetric aids. It really is quite interesting. Thanks for watching. Special thanks as always to my patrons, Lynn Dobbs, Mark McManus, What Jesus, and all the rest, who are the logical being that allows for the existence of the logic that is my channel. If you'd like to necessitate an infinite regress of logical gods, you can join us over on Patreon for as little as a dollar per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino. If you feel so inclined, you can also support the channel through direct donation or my Amazon wishlist, which are linked in the description. If you'd like to listen to my videos in podcast form, the link for that is also in the description, as well as links to my social media accounts and my P.O. Box address. See you next time!